This is KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Carly Huckles. Supporters of a potential ballot measure in this November's election say they're fed up with oil and gas industry building wells near homes and schools.
We've tried to compromise. We've tried to collaborate. And they don't want to have discussions about basic health and safety measures.
We'll hear the breakdown of that battle.
And speaking of battles, newspapers across the country have been cutting staff left and right lately, including the Denver Post.
We were under attack by our own owners.
And that prompted journalists there to go rogue. They're now part of an international experiment in reinventing journalism. We'll have more on that.
Boulder's Pearl Street Mall is always a great summer destination for shopping and dining, but some tourists come for a different kind of entertainment.
We'll get a look at the weirder side of Boulder.
I love the weird stuff, plus Howie Mofsovitz reviews the new movie, Eighth Grade.
But first, the annual High Plains Chautauqua Return to Greeley this week. It's a unique blend of living history that draws on education, theater, and the humanities. This year's theme focused on the 1960s. In addition to bringing in adult performers who will portray well-known names like Walter Cronkite, Maya Angelou, and Robert Kennedy, the program also works actively with young people to discover and teach the next generation of performers. Dozens of young Chautauqua scholars from schools throughout Weld County have spent a part of their summer diving into history books and the internet to bring characters from the past to life.
Then a cameraman ran up through the whole crowd and stuck a microphone right in front of my mouth. And he said, "Audrey, how does it feel to be known as the greatest actress of the 1960s? I was shocked. I had never had any.
That's Charlie Nelson, a soon-to-be sixth grader at Chapelo Fine Arts Magnet K through 8 school in Greeley. She's portraying actress and philanthropist Audrey Hepburn, but she's not preparing for this role all on her own.
Beautifully done. The accent is fun. Was that hard? Did you work on it at all? It just came.
Susan Marie Fronchek is a living history scholar and a seasoned Chautauqua performer herself. She also works with young Chautauquans to develop their presentations. On this day, she's coaching a group of middle school-aged performers in a community room at the Centennial Park Library in Greeley.
I start by asking the kids three questions. Why should I be remembered in history, meaning my character? What hardships or obstacles did I face? What was hard along the way? Because that's where character is formed. And third, what was my historical context? Where and when did I live? How did that place and time affect my life? And with those, that helps you decide what to put in a monologue and what to leave out.
After the young performers have researched and written their monologues, it's time to get up and practice in front of an audience. They'll start with their peers and parents.
Bonjour, mes amis. Hello, my friends. I am honored that you would have me, your humble prime minister.
That's Greeley Central High School junior Hayden Hine performing as French politician Charles de Gaulle. Fronchek pays attention to every word and gesture, taking notes and rarely interrupting unless it's to fact-check a detail. At the end of the performance, she offers guidance tailored to each child.
Something I love about the Young Chautauqua program is it doesn't matter what level you come into it. If you come in and you're one of those kids who's just terrified to get up and speak, and if by the end of it, you stood up and said five sentences, clearly, so an audience can hear it, that's a major accomplishment for that kid.
And say warm instead, and that's that understatement, because it goes way more than warm.
For some kids, like the cameos, where they've been working at it for several years, those kids, I can work on some of those refinements and posture, not just nitpicks of historical accuracy, but timing, things that they can take themselves to the next level.
Who was it? Who
so I just try to see where each kid is. I try to see where they are and what's the one thing. If I could only give them one thing, because of course, with a given kid, maybe you can think of 10 things that would make them better, but if you tell them 10, then they'll feel awful about themselves and they'll go home and never want to do it again. You got to pick one or two little things that you really think is going to make them feel more powerful up there. You want to empower them to feel good about their performance and want to do it again and get better.
And of course, you yourself are still a performer. Is there something that you've learned coaching the young Chautauquans that you've, you know, has shaped what you do?
Absolutely. You can't teach without learning. And in fact, those three things that we began with, I need to credit at the time, fourth grade teacher out in Grand Junction. I was trying to shape, how do I tell the kids to get started? She's the one who came up with that list. It's modified. We've tweaked the wording over the years. But she was the one who managed to capture those three elements, and I've used them ever since. When I start a new character, Irma Bombeck, what's she remembered for? What was hard along the way to doing that? And how did her time and place affect her life? I try to take the why should I be remembered in history to a higher octave and say, and how does that connect to today?
Now, High Plains Chautauqua is over for the year, but you can see photos of Susan Marie and see some of the young Chautauquans in action at KUNC.org.
It's back to school time, but a new report says some ordinary school supplies are made with chemicals which can cause cancer, reproductive, or developmental problems in children. KUNC's Stephanie Daniel has more.
The Colorado Public Interest Research Group Foundation tested 27 common supplies and found some that contain toxic chemicals like asbestos, lead, and benzene. COPIRG Director Danny Katz says manufacturers are responsible for creating safe products.
We don't need asbestos in order to make crayons. We don't need phthalates in order to make three-ring binders.
Katz says parents should look for products that have a circle with an AP in it or a stamp that says Consumer Product Safety Commission. A guide to safe back-to-school shopping can be found at copergfoundation.org. For KUNC, I'm Stephanie Daniel.
New data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration show the Colorado River Basin experienced both record high temperatures and below average precipitation for the first half of this year. KUNC's Luke Runyon has more.
The Colorado River and its tributaries provide water to 40 million people in seven states in the West. The dry weather is causing reservoirs to tank throughout the watershed. Lakes in western Colorado that were filled to capacity last year are now approaching record low levels. And low soil moisture means farmers and ranchers are relying more heavily on stored water. Throughout the basin, temperatures are forecast to stay higher than average for the foreseeable future, though some monsoonal rains could bring much-needed drought relief. I'm Luke Runyon.
Many wildfires are raging across the West, and a record-breaking wildfire in California has prompted tweets from President Trump and Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. They blame the fires on, quote, bad environmental laws, too many dead or dying trees, and not enough logging. Michael Kotis has written a book on big, severe wildfires in the West. He says one tweet can't even begin to cover why they are bigger and more dangerous these days.
It's a very complex problem.
Kotis says climate change, longer fire seasons, and way more people in the West all play a part. And yeah, many forests out here are either sick or overgrown because of decades of fire suppression and poor forest management. But Kotis says more logging isn't going to stop fire.
A logging company would like to go in and remove the big granddaddy trees that are really valuable as timber. Most of what needs to be removed from these forests are brush, scrub, small spindly trees that have been sick that have almost no economic value.
Leading climate scientists suggest we're nearing a point when reduced carbon emissions won't stop climate change. Near record high temperatures are still expected to fuel fires in the Northern Rockies.
And while we're on the subject of wildfires, a team of scientists are taking a deeper look into how the smoke is impacting our atmosphere. I found out that their research involves a converted C-130 military transport aircraft. And right now, that aircraft is flying downwind from fires in Boise, Idaho. The scientists are looking at the chemistry of wildfire smoke and its impact on areas like air quality, weather, and climate. Colorado State University's Emily Fisher is a lead scientist on the project.
What's different about our field campaign is we're trying to generate statistics. So we're trying to sample the smoke under a lot of different environmental conditions repeatedly so we have a full picture of the chemistry of the smoke. Because without that, you really can't improve either air quality forecasts or storm forecast.
The team will continue their flights in Boise until the end of August. The aircraft returns to Colorado in September, and Fisher says that at that point, graduate students will lead flights around the Front Range. The team will continue to collect data to understand how the smoke is impacting our atmosphere.
Monday was the deadline to turn in signatures for groups wanting to get measures on the November election ballot. One of those groups is called Colorado Rising. They want to increase the setback distance between oil and gas drilling and residential development. KUNC's Matt Bloom has more on Initiative 97.
It's hard not to see the presence of the oil and gas industry in Colorado. It's grown over the years, just like the population, and it's why volunteers like Patricia Nelson spent a part of her summer collecting signatures.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Thank you for your time.
On a recent afternoon in Greeley, Nelson was making a last-minute push for Initiative 97.
It's to increase setbacks from populated or inhabited buildings, houses, daycare centers, schools.
From the current 500 feet from homes and 1,000 from schools to 2,500 feet, period. After politely listening to Nelson, local realtor Bill Hall doesn't sign the petition.
There's no need. The frack is happening over a mile and a half in the ground.
But a few minutes later, Vanessa Cruz eagerly takes the clipboard and adds her name. She lives within a half mile of four wells east of Greeley.
I know for sure that our water is not as safe as it used to be. We've had it tested on multiple accounts. I've had to put in water filtration devices.
In 2014, supporters of a constitutional amendment to increase setbacks called off their effort after Governor John Hickenlooper agreed to a panel to study the issue, along with the industry. 2 years later, backers failed to get enough signatures on a similar measure. And now, in 2018...
So it effectively will serve as a ban for oil and gas in the state of Colorado.
Tracy Bentley is head of the Colorado Petroleum Council, which is the state's division of the American Petroleum Institute. She says the effort is irresponsible, especially for an industry that employs more than 230,000 people in the state.
When you put it on a map and you set aside 2,500 feet from any occupied structure, it effectively does take 80% of the surface land off the table for oil and gas development.
But the lead organizer at Colorado Rising sees things differently. Outside of their Boulder office, Ann Lee Foster says this is not a ban on industry activity.
We're not isolating any minerals. We're asking for less than a half mile. It's really not that much.
With modern technology like horizontal drilling, she says a larger setback still allows the industry to do its job while keeping it away from homes and schools.
2,500 feet is based on a Colorado health study that showed that within a half mile, about 2,500 feet, the most grave health impacts occur. And also 2,500 feet is the standard evacuation radius that first responders use when there's a leak or an explosion, an incident at a well site.
Denver 7 has learned the remains of two people have been pulled from the rubble of this house explosion in Firestone.
Two other people inside that same home, they're in the hospital right now.
The Firestone explosion has changed a lot of people's opinion about the industry.
All of a sudden, the house shook and we heard a loud bang.
The home in the 2017 tragedy was built 200 feet away from an existing well that did not have a properly sealed flow line. However, Initiative 97 only addresses how close new wells could be built to homes, and not how close developers can build to existing wells.
We're doing this because we don't see any other option. We've tried to compromise, we've tried to collaborate, and they don't want to have discussions about basic health and safety measures.
Tracy Bentley acknowledges the concerns Colorado Rising has about health and safety, but she says implementing a blanket setback increase without consulting oil and gas companies would be problematic.
The vast majority of Coloradans understand the importance of our industry, and they want us here as long as we continue to develop responsibly. But a ban on oil and gas is not just bad for the industry. It's bad for consumers, and it's really bad for the economy.
It's why companies like Anadarko Petroleum have spent millions of dollars to defeat Initiative 97, even before it's fully known if it will go to voters. Colorado Rising needs over 98,000 signatures to make it on the ballot. They turned in more than 171,000. The Secretary of State's office has until September 5th to verify them. For KUNC, I'm Matt Bloom.
It's August. It's summer. This is the time of year when I love spending lots of time outside.
Not me. The heat sucks. I've got a countdown on Twitter of how many days are left until Halloween when hopefully the heat will be gone.
I do understand that. But for many people, summer is a time to hang out outside and do some people watching.
One of my favorite pastimes.
Now, of course, at Boulder's Pearl Street Mall, that can mean something different.
Well, we were looking for a guy who folds himself up into a clear box.
I was just there last weekend. All I saw were some musicians without shoes.
Well, they're just enjoying the summer weather.
Of course.
But before we get to that, a new news organization is about to launch in our region. It's called the Colorado Sun, and it's one of 14 publications that are part of an international experiment in reinventing journalism. As KUNC's Ray Ellen Bichelle reports, the birth of the Sun starts with the tribulations of a century-old newspaper.
The Denver Post wasn't dying, says Larry Rickman. It was being murdered.
We were under attack by our own owners.
Rickman was an editor at the newspaper. He says it all began when the hedge fund Alden Global Capital bought the Post. First, there were some layoffs, then more, then a third of the newsroom was cut. Then, he says something even more ominous happened. Censorship of stories about the whole ordeal.
And to me, that was the final straw.
But around the same time, a new media company called Civil reached out to Rickman with an offer.
We said that we want to give you a new home.
That's Matt Coolidge. He's a co-founder of the group, which aims to create a new place for journalism to live that doesn't involve billionaire publishers and hedge funds.
What we are ultimately trying to do is connect buyers and sellers. In this case, buyers just so happen to be those who want to read and support journalism, and sellers are journalists.
Coolidge and his colleagues had been watching as local publications across the country got sliced up after their owners decided they weren't profitable enough.
The San Antonio Express, the Miami Herald, the Kansas City Star, the San Jose Mercury News, the Oregonian. I could go on for another probably half hour on this. The common thread there is that none of these once venerated newsrooms are in control of their own destiny.
Civil wants to change that. More on that later. But first, over at the Denver Post, Rickman was intrigued. He says it sounded like it would give them a fighting chance.
And a fighting chance is more than we had working for a hedge fund.
With initial funding from Civil, Rickman and nine other staffers started a new publication, the Colorado Sun. They're now back in downtown Denver, within eyeshot of their old building, and they're gearing up to launch in September.
It's like we can just rock it.
Did you have a chance to look at the photos?
They're one of 14 newsrooms working with Civil across the U.S. and Asia, and that means learning about a new type of cryptocurrency.
I know, I think Dana and I are going to buy a few. Are you going to buy some?
Probably.
Yeah. Yep, you heard right. Cryptocurrency. And this is where the whole Civil thing starts to get really complicated. It all hinges on something called Civil tokens.
What Civil is trying to do at its core is build a platform economy.
People will buy Civil tokens using real money for, at most, 94 cents each. They can then use those tokens to vote for newsrooms on the platform that they think are doing a good job. Alternatively, they can also vote what they consider bad newsrooms off the island. Coolidge says Civil has essentially made vetting good journalism into a game.
It could be called Spot the Unethical Newsroom and keep it off of this platform.
But he stresses it won't be mob rule. Token holders can't just vote against newsrooms because they don't fit their point of view.
We have created a rule set for this economic game, and this is a document called the Civil Constitution.
That constitution says there is an objective truth. Journalists on the platform cannot knowingly produce misinformation. Token holders who support these rules by challenging an unethical newsroom can get rewarded in cryptocurrency. How exactly might this save local newsrooms? Shan Wang is a staff writer with the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard. She says that part is still pretty murky. After all, this whole new ecosystem for journalism doesn't exist yet. The Civil tokens, the core of the system, will go up for sale September 18.
I would never, ever believe that any one business model or any one technology or any ecosystem will be the one thing that, you know, saves journalism.
But she says it's an interesting experiment.
Yes.
And she says, who knows? A few years ago, people were just as befuddled about the internet and how it could change journalism. Maybe Civil will be the same. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Ray Ellen Bichelle. This summer, Boulder's Pearl Street Mall turns 41. While the area's restaurants and shops are certainly part of the appeal, there's some more unique aspects that draw people in. KUNC arts and culture reporter Stacey Nick has more.
For Jeff West and his family, Boulder is a must on their vacation to-do list when they visit from Chicago.
We come here every year and come spend one day from when we're in the mountains on vacation. We come down here and enjoy Pearl Street and some food and some entertainment.
Today they're on the lookout for one specific entertainer.
We're looking for a guy who folds himself up into a clear box.
That may sound strange, unless you're familiar with one of Pearl Street's longest-running tenants.
Everybody, run, come, look at me.
About 50 people are gathered around Ibashi while he artfully folds his 6-foot-tall, 160-pound body into a 20-by-20-inch clear plastic box.
Some people call it contortionist. I call it Rasta yoga because it's my own style.
Originally from St. Kitts in the Caribbean, the 61-year-old has called Boulder home for the last 27 years.
It's kind of relaxed to me. It's not too, you don't have too much of crimes. You don't have too much of nonsense going on here. So it's much easier for me to be here.
Pearl Street is known across the country as a mecca for jugglers, magicians, and buskers of all sorts. 38-year-old escape artist Casey Moore lives in Texas but spends his summers in Boulder. After 18 years of performing, he's found that larger cities don't always mean better shows.
I got a nice small crowd right now. If I get you guys being loud, everyone else will hear y'all. They'll realize I'm trying to do my first show. Are you guys with me? Just be loud. Everybody say yeah.
Yeah!
That'll work. Good
and
enough.
Even when he has a bad show in Boulder, like today, he says it's worth it to be here.
It's one of the only spots where performers like us can do it. There's only probably 10 in the country that's actually workable, and Boulder's one of the best ones.
What makes it so good?
The people. They're educated. They got money.
There's a sort of symbiotic relationship between the mall and the performers, says Lane Landreth. He's the special events coordinator for the city.
Now going on 40-plus years, it's the heart and soul of the city, and we also hear Keep Boulder Weird, so I think that the buskers and the performers are part of that.
But even on Pearl Street, if you're going to jump through a flaming hoop, you need to jump through a legal one first and get a special entertainment permit.
We only require that of the folks who are doing some really crazy and out there stuff, like using fire, any kind of juggling of a projectile, whether it's a knife or a bowling pin, if they're using any apparatus like a unicycle or a slack line that's over 6 feet high. Those are the folks that we need insurance from.
And there's the key word, insurance. Buskers like Casey Moore, who also uses fire in his act, are required to carry liability insurance.
I'm going to get up there and juggle the fire. Right after that, I'm going to get wrapped in a straitjacket and chains.
While Moore has never had to file a claim, he knows performers who have. Once, he saw a fire juggler lose control of one of his props.
His fireball Ebola, his Diablo, flew off and hit a lady in the glasses, busted her glasses. If he wouldn't have had the insurance, he would have been in a world of trouble.
Other than a permit, Boulder's street performers are mostly self-policing, which is why at almost every show, at some point, you're bound to hear this.
The tricks and stunts you're about to see are incredibly dangerous and or deadly. Do not try them at home. Your blank stare constitutes a legal affirmative that releases me from all liability.
That's Brent Fiasco. With 3 summers under his belt, he's sort of a newbie on Pearl Street. But like many of the performers who come here, he was instantly smitten.
There's really nowhere else, especially this close to my home, that this happens. It's a really special thing, I think.
Home the rest of the year is Phoenix, Arizona. Fiasco says having a good working relationship with the city and business owners is essential. That's why performers are okay with keeping walkways clear, making sure their shows are family-friendly, and handling their own scheduling.
It kind of keeps the performers on the hook and makes sure that everybody out here knows what they're doing and is professional and so on.
Everyone together, when I count three, you all say, light it up. 1, 2, 3. Light it up!
Because while it may seem like fun and games, busking in Boulder is serious business. For KUNC, I'm Stacy Nick.
Yes! Thank you very much. My name is Brent Fiasco. Please come forward. Put your tips in the orange bucket. High fives are free. Come get some. Thank you.
In the new movie Eighth Grade, a girl goes through some of the grade school pains that most of us can remember.
I hated middle school. It was so awkward.
I think it might have been for KUNC film critic Howie Mofshevitz, too. He also teaches film and television at CU Denver, and he says it's all a little too familiar.
I've never heard anyone say that they had a good time in eighth grade. Maybe a few people cover up how they loved it, but for most people, it's an awful jumble of hormonal awkwardness that manifests itself in nastiness, pouting, jealousy, and enormous self-doubt about every single aspect of body, mind, and the social world. Kayla Elsie Fisher posts videos of herself talking on subjects like being yourself, or confidence, or putting yourself out there, which are for her all versions of being yourself, which is where most of Kayla's struggle settles. But she seems pretty coherent and stable for an eighth grader, at least until she's off camera and in her actual life. Kayla lives with her father, no mother or siblings in sight. And she goes to school where she's as awkward as you expect her to be. She's tongue-tied when she summons the nerve to talk to the queen bees of her class or the boy she fantasizes about. She's voted the most quiet girl in the class popularity poll. Kayla herself is not so skinny as those dreadful girls, or that boy who all look like they've been starved, and the boy looks like he's plunked his head into a barrel of grease, or let's call it hair product. Kayla's awful to her father, who can do nothing right. So as you'd expect, eighth grade recounts a series of mishaps and missteps. The pool party at the home of disdainful but sarcastically named Kennedy makes for particular disaster. Kayla's cursed from the get-go because she's invited to the party by Kennedy's mother, in a world where parents rank lower than pond scum. Then Kayla puts on a one-piece bathing suit instead of a bikini. She gets the silent, snotty stare from every kid except for the geeky boy wearing goggles who's actually willing to relate to her. You expect all these things from a movie called Eighth Grade. It's the stuff of light comedy and it's amusing, although not so much as you might hope. But writer and director Bo Burnham keeps his movie easy and familiar and asks few questions about anything. The movie never tests Kayla to let her see who she is. One sequence gets close. Kayla winds up with a high school boy in the back seat of his car. He's bad at smooth talking, but compared to Kayla, he's almost persuasive. For a few moments, you feel the threat. You don't know how far he'll push it or how far she'll give in. And for those few moments, the movie has consequence, but not for long. Her situation at home never makes much sense. The missing mom is simply unmentioned until near the end when Kayla's father says something about when mom left the family. You can't tell if she died or ran away with a traveling salesman. From what her father says about changing diapers and things, Kayla must have been an infant. But otherwise, it's a blank spot in the movie, just like school itself, which seems to be the location for cell phones and social gyrations, but not a single mention of anything that might happen in class, anything the kids might be studying. Eighth graders still learn and talk about school, I believe. Eighth grade comes close to being good, but it's like a 10th school reunion. People tell lots of stories about what it was like back then, about their adventures, who they made out with when their parents were away, who got drunk or stoned when. But everyone's afraid to say anything about what their lives then meant to them now, or what they're doing now, what disappoints them, or what pleases them. Former schoolmates are still locked into the kind of strutting pretension that the eighth graders put out as a matter of course, maybe as a matter of survival. Imagine if eighth grade got into stuff like that. For KUNC, I'm Howie Mobshevitz.
This has been Colorado Edition.
Our show this week was produced by me, Carly Huckles.
And me, Erin O'Toole. Editors Ashley Jeffcoat and Brian Larson contributed to our show. Ashley also manages digital. Our intro music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana.
Other music in this episode, Beautiful Life by Broke for Free, Climbing the Mountain by Poddington Bear, Mantra by Evan Schaefer, and Chill Funk by Cambo. Our outro music is Good Grief by Ryan Little. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe. We'll be back next week with more great stories for you.
Find Colorado Edition at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next Sunday evening at 9 on KUNC.